Hello, and welcome to Why Make, the podcast where we talk with artists about why they make, with me, your host, Eric Wolkin. If you'd like to learn more about Why Make, please go to our website, why-make.com. Also, please consider supporting the Why Make podcast by again going to whymake.com and clicking the donate button. All donations are tax deductible through our fiscal sponsor, Fractured Atlas. In this episode, we are turning to our Mind of a Maker mini-series with furniture maker and sculptor Ellie Richards. The idea behind the Mind of a Maker series, which is a new element inside the regular Why Make podcast, is to talk to artists about the genesis and creation of a specific work or body of work. In a sense, peeling back the onion yet one more layer to further expose that messy thing that is the creative process. We met up with Ellie in the summer of 2023 when Why Make was so graciously hosted by the Penland School of Craft, while Ellie was finishing up her three-year stint as an artist in residence there. This story starts with an idea that was brewing for years before Ellie began making the piece we talk about this episode. And that idea was a fascination with the fantasy coffin practice that exists in Ghana. Fantasy coffins, as the word implies, are fantastical, large, hollow sculptural form built almost entirely with hand tools that can be just about anything from a jet plane to a tomato, basically trying to capture a person's essence as they pass on. And then they are quite simply buried in it, a practice far different from our Western views of death and burial. She was encouraged to pursue her exploration of fantasy coffins by the artist Eric Anong, a descendant of the original Ghanaian coffin makers. Eventually, Ellie started to consider how to use these skills to create an object of her own design. And in this edition of Mind of a Maker, Ellie walks us through the process from inspiration to the final construction of her piece titled Basket Casket. After listening, we invite you to check out our short film on the subject. It's a companion piece to this podcast episode. And here you can see images of Ellie's time in Ghana and the process she used in creating her piece. You can find it on the video page of why-make.com and also on our YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm Ellie Richards, and I'm an artist. I'm a sculptor, and I'm a furniture maker. And for the better part of 10 years, I've been trying to figure out how all of those things fit into a career. The Basket Casket piece, it was something that resulted from a body of research that I did a couple years prior. And that was a sort of apprenticeship abroad at the Kanikwe workshop in Accra, Ghana. And that's where I learned just a sort of taste of the traditional coffin making practices that exist there. I didn't go there because I wanted to become a coffin maker. I just went there because I was so intrigued by the techniques that they were using to make such abstract forms out of wood with minimal tooling. And so that carried me through to making Basket Casket, which is sort of a scaled down version of using the coffin making techniques that is a hollow form that opens like a box. So the coffin making tradition in Ghana is a spectrum. And so there are traditional coffins that are made, and I was, you know, able to visit some of those where it's just, you know, your general casket with trimmings. It can be formal, it can be plain. And then you'd like move into the fantasy coffins where, you know, maybe people had extra money or a person in their family who had a position of power that like maybe they felt obligated to have a fantasy coffin made for, or maybe it was that person's wish. The tradition in Ghana for these fantasy coffins, as they're known, started in 1950s colonial Ghana, where there was a tradition or a celebration for chiefs that they would sort of be carried along in palanquins, which are sort of sedan chairs. So they're sort of carrying along someone in celebration of them. And this is when that person is still alive. And the story goes that there was a preparation for one of these celebrations, but the chief died before he could be carried in this elaborate chair that was made for him. And so this was a very fantastical chair that was made for this chief, but he didn't get to be seen in it alive. Instead, he was buried in it. And everybody was really sort of thrilled by this idea of burying this very elaborate thing that was just made, and it was cemented in that event that moving forward, others would sort of pursue this as well, wanting to be buried in something so elaborate and fantastical as a celebration of their life. And so the coffins themselves grew to become known as proverb boxes, and they would symbolize a person's essence, identity, passion, and life. So if you were a carpenter, a casket would be made or constructed to be, say, a hammer, and just really sort of silly things even. I've seen some that were Nike shoes. I've seen some that are fish for fishermen. So you can start to see it was a way for people to express their identity on their passing.
Ellie is explaining the most popular account of the origins of the fantasy caskets, but there is more to the story, according to the Conaquay Workshop's website. Not long after the king was buried in the first palanquin turn casket, which incidentally was shaped like a cocoa pod, Seth Conaquay, the founder of the Conaquay Workshop's grandmother, died. Growing up in Teshie, a coastal suburb near Accra's airport, she had always been mystified by the planes flying overhead. However, she never got a chance to take a flight. Remembering the enthusiasm of the crowd at the chief's funeral a few months earlier, Conaquay decided to commemorate her death by giving her something she had not been able to accomplish in life. He buried her in a coffin shaped like an airplane so she could fly into the afterlife. Within a few weeks after seeing this, local people began to request unique coffins for themselves and their loved ones. A fisherman asked for a boat, a farmer for an onion, and so the tradition of fantasy caskets began.
In Ghana, it was sort of explained to me like it's an opportunity to celebrate a person's life. And I know that, you know, in the United States, it can be similar, but there's still a lot of, like, grief and sadness associated with that moment, and it can be really hard emotionally just to process death that quickly to get to a place of positivity around it. And somehow I was able to observe that that kind of was built into the sort of cultural understanding. It's just something that you grow up knowing, that like death is a part of life, and it just felt more integrated into like a lifestyle. So for instance, funerals would just be massive parties with, you know, food, family members, parades, no expense sort of spared, and, you know, parties that went on into the wee hours of the morning. Yeah. So the fantasy coffins themselves just feel more like an opportunity to celebrate a person's life and to focus on the positive aspects of life. The coffin making industry in Ghana, it's sort of pervasive. And I remember when I was there, you know, you'd be walking down the street and you'd see workshops sprinkled throughout the city in Accra, that's the capital. And the one that I worked with was called the Conaquay Workshop, which was one of the first. Actually, I think it was the descendants of the people who made that initial sedan chair that got buried before the chief could be carried in it alive. Eric Anong, who is one of the sons of the original coffin makers, is an artist working in the States right now, and he has brought his tradition to the United States and exposed a lot of woodworkers and furniture makers and just artists in general to the practice. And so that's been a huge connection for me in pursuing, you know, this knowledge. And Eric has been incredibly generous with it and just given me a super strong access point to go and stay with his family and do this even while he was still in the United States. the people who work in the workshop are truly raised in the business. And so, you know, from a really early age, could be 9, 10, 12, 13, they're in the shop helping out making these coffins. And so they have a lifetime of like tacit knowledge that is just passed on to them through time in the shop with their elders and family members. It was not common to see other women working in the carpentry shops, nor was it common to see the coffins being made for women. I know that, yeah, I had a lot of experiences with, you know, mothers and grandmothers who came and were providing input on like what the coffins should look like and the sort of negotiating process of buying them. But yeah, I was not only, yeah, a white person working in the shop, which was an anomaly. It was also a female working in the shop, and that just made people curious. And we had conversations about that, and everyone was just sort of more or less curious, like why I would want to do something like this. So I not only had to explain like what my lifestyle is like in the United States as an artist, I also had to kind of explain how that lifestyle is possible, even though I'm a woman. You know, initially I was interested in it because I saw these forms and they were so large and they had to be hollow to contain the body, and it sort of confounded me. How were they constructed? And then furthermore, how were they painted? They looked almost pristine, smoothly carved, almost like auto body work. And I really wanted to learn more about, you know, how were these things being constructed, especially in settings where they probably didn't have a finely tuned woodworking shop. One of the things that they taught me when I was there was that you, in order to make a volume, you splice it in half. And so you have this cross section that you're working with, and you build up on the one half, and then you build the second half, and then you can join those two together. And also when I was there, I learned that there's very little sketching involved. Like, they don't plan these out. There's no full-scale drawings. I will say that literally they took a stick and drew into the dirt ground the cross section of like the tomato coffin that they were making, and then built up from that. So it was just a rough sketch on the ground, and they went from there. I just, basically you start with that ring on the ground, and you take pieces of wood and you piece it together one by one. So that was the other thing that was great. It was like, no matter what, you cannot speed this process up. You have to connect one piece to the piece next to it. And so there's no like batching parts out or cutting all the joints ahead of time and, you know, having it ready for a big glue up. It's one piece connected to the next. And the way that they connect them is through a little bit of glue and some nails that you hammer in by hand. So I really liked that dependency of the form on each of the individual parts, and that together, only when they were all together and that you had an enclosed form, was it structurally stable or sound because of all of the connections that had formed over the course of building it. The meaning of these fantasy coffins for me is more about storytelling and narrative, and they contain a person's essence for me. That to me is really meaningful. I make boxes and containers, and I constantly am thinking about like where do we place things? Where do we place memories? Where do we place stories? Where do we place physical objects that carry those things with them? And it's a ritualistic act to construct something specific to someone or something. And in that, it's like you get to then process your feelings about that person or that thing, and you get to contextualize them. And yeah, I don't know, it's a space. The act of making the coffins seems to me like a space to process feelings and emotions. and identify a person's narrative or story. And I think that even though they then go into the ground, it's the sort of journey of making it, of celebrating it, and giving that person a sort of stage to be on in their last moments. And so the fantasy coffins for me kind of are mostly about telling a person's story. As an artist who came back from Ghana after staying a month, I was only able to, you know, really witness maybe three or four coffins start to finish. And so being there for a month was like, I had a couple of goals to, first of all, understand what was the substructure for these, given that they were hollow forms and in wood, like how do they connect all of those pieces into also compound curves and forms that could open and close, and learn what type of wood they were using and how was that wood milled down into the components that they could use with no power tools. And so I was able to kind of figure out those things and figure out like the sort of general collection of hand tools that were used and, you know, bring that back. So then it becomes a question of what did I want to do with it? And I didn't know, nor did I think it was important to know at the time. And so I ended up actually, sitting with it for a while, a couple of years even, and finally had an opportunity at a residency to really give that time to unfold and to give those techniques time to unfold through my experience as an artist and maker. So I knew I had a good chunk of time where my other responsibilities would be able to take a back seat, and that I could use this time to dive deep into what this would become for me. Like, how could I amalgamate the techniques and then put them into an object? And like, that was my objective. It wasn't anything really more than that. I had the time and the space to start from square one and see if I could resolve something. And so the basket casket piece is a translation of those techniques into an expression of my own sort of making. I was struggling with the scale of the coffin. I didn't really envision working that large, but I thought that if I could make more sort of handheld objects, that might be something more applicable to my resources and ways of making. I feel like a lot of other mediums get to have this, like working on a small scale, like a lot of jewelers, you know, you're in one space, even like painters get to experience that by just, you know, they have the medium that they're expressing with and then the canvas. I wanted to create that in woodworking somehow. And I just wanted to really bring it into a moment where I didn't feel like I had to run all over the place and I could just be with that process of building something up. I wanted to be able to hold each piece in my fingertips. I wanted to be able to manipulate it with, you know, my little cabinet maker's vise and my little sander and block plane. And I wanted it to feel like just like an intimate experience. So I took the techniques and milled down wood that was much tinier and just did everything on a miniature scale. I did not have a finished idea of what mine would become. I knew that it wasn't going to be representational. It wasn't going to be a recognizable object. I just wanted it to be sort of a form that grew from itself in a sense. And what ended up happening was that I started developing ideas about where I wanted the piece to go. I wanted it to have undulating curves in it. I wanted to challenge myself and see if I could create, yeah, a soft, you know, round curve, and then wanted to see like how tall could I make something. So there was like certain little challenges that I started to give myself that added to the project itself. And in the end, it became something that did feel very bodily, and it was very much of the scale of a human body, but not to contain it. And so it ended up to me looking very much like a torso. And that made sense in that it was a direct reference to the coffin forms, and it arrived. My basket casket piece, there's a bottom, which is a solid piece of wood, and then it sort of torso shape with a rounded closed top. So I started that piece from the top and then kind of built down, and like the base was the last part that I attached. When you look at the basket casket piece, it looks like a solid form, but it actually, there's a splice in it that's halfway, and I didn't make that happen until after the whole form was built. So I took the whole form onto the bandsaw and cross-cut it in half to make it into a two-part container, because otherwise I felt like, how would you know that it was a hollow form? And the inside is not painted at all, but the outside has a sort of patchwork. It's a multicolor patchwork feel of lots of different colors of acrylic and milk paint and gold leaf. And it's sort of technicolor in a way. But on the inside, when you open it up, you can just see the blank basswood and all of the different pieces and glue, you know, squeezing out, and it's not cleaned up at all. And that sort of juxtaposition of something very elaborate on the outside and something very crude and unfinished on the inside, these interiors and exteriors, and the sort of facade that these coffins are in a way, that was, you know, my way of communicating that, to leave the inside imperfect and unfinished, and to have the outside appear as a solid whole, but then, you know, only after having the experience of opening up and examining it would you have that contrast happen. Basket casket was done, but maybe there's another iteration of it, and I'm not, in the same way that I didn't rush making that one, I'm not going to rush making the next one. It's sort of going to have to happen when there's a clearing of time and space. It's difficult to take what I used with basket casket, which was a lot of time, and making a piece that is sort of an anomaly in a way. It doesn't really fit into any categories. It's sort of functional. It is a sculpture, but it's got all of this baggage with it that gives it meaning. So a lot of people look at it and don't really know what it was that got it there. And I think that's the way it is with a lot of art objects. But in this case, I was really thrilled to have the opportunity to talk about it a little bit more, because I don't feel like it carries that narrative with it right up front. In Western woodworking, everything is so planned and precise. And this way of working was very intuitive. It was something that you had to let go of. I had to let go of a lot of those rules that I was taught over the years about how to build something. I loved that about it, though. It was so great to have a break from an experience, just a totally different way of using the same exact material that I had like spent all of these years learning how to work. And it fits more with my mode of expression, which is very intuitive. Like, I already was using the bandsaw to, you know, sketch out forms with no drawing. And I was already like sculpting with power grinders and hand gouges with not a super exacting plan ahead of me. And that feeling as an artist is not unique to me, but it's sort of one way you can go forward, is to kind of feel it out as you go. And there's a fine balance there, you know, like having a plan and totally winging it. And so I think for me, the planning and everything was in the apprenticeship and like learning those techniques, and then I was able to apply them to a form that didn't really have a set direction.
A couple of ending thoughts to leave you with in Ellie's journey from Ghana to making basket casket. One, there are many avenues into the creative process. Ellie chose to learn a traditional set of skills that, mixed with a generous amount of time, allowed her to explore a new way of thinking about making an object. And secondly, not all objects reveal their secrets upon first glance. Sometimes you need to dig a little deeper and understand their origins, or as Ellie states, their baggage, to fully understand the work. To see Ellie at work on the basket casket piece, check out our short film on the video page of why-make.com. If you want to learn more about Ellie's making, take a listen to episodes 36 and 37 of the podcast, where she is our guest. We will also have links to Erica Nong and the Kanakwe workshop if you want to learn more about the fantasy coffin practice in Ghana. Why Make is a production of Rob Helmkamp and Eric Wolken. Today's episode was edited with help from Joe Dassault and Johanna Zorn. You can help support the Why Make podcast by going to why-make.com and clicking on the donate button. All donations are tax deductible through our fiscal sponsor, Fractured Atlas. Music for this episode was generously provided by Jim Roberts, the guest on Why Make episode 64. It comes from his recordings Waka Waka and Two Traditions. Additional music comes from the Ghana Project 2013 that recorded several traditional funeral songs performed by Ghanaian artists in Ghana. It's used in this episode under a Creative Commons license. You can find more of the recordings on YouTube by searching the username The Ghana Project 2013. Finally, music on our episode also comes from the Internet Archive.